Ever tried reading while jogging, cooking, or even juggling flaming torches? Yeah, doesn't end well. But with audiobooks.com, you can conquer books without the circus act. Dive into over 450,000 titles, including more than 10,000 free ones. Get hooked on a bestseller, find your next obsession, or finally read that classic you've been avoiding since high school. And here's the inside scoop. Sign up today for a free 30-day trial and snag your first three audiobooks on the house. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcastfree today. That's audiobooks.com/podcastfree.
Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 180, entitled How to Transform Your Greatest Adversity into Your Greatest Gift, I chat with Marcus Aurelius Anderson. Marcus Aurelius Anderson is a mindset coach, speaker, and the author of the book, The Gift of Adversity. In today's episode, Marcus shares with us his incredible story of overcoming a severe spinal injury that left him paralyzed from the neck down and the profound lessons he learned from this experience. I say experience because Marcus was somehow able to reverse the paralysis and recover nearly 100% physically and emotionally, become a better man from it all. Marcus shares with us how he was able to do it and how he was able to transform the greatest adversity he ever faced into his greatest gift in life. If you're wondering how to overcome mentally, emotionally, or even physically crippling adversities that come your way in life and transfer them into your greatest assets, check this episode out now. You are going to love it. Our brand new Elite Life Nutrition Women's Multivitamin is now available. Packed with 28 powerful nutrients, this multivitamin for women can be the single greatest gift for your wife, girlfriend, mother, or even beloved granny, and can ensure she's at her very best in all areas of life. And not to mention, of course, for our female listeners, the perfect gift for yourself. Our brand new Women's Multi contains the complete A to Z formula of nutritional essentials to keep women at their very best. Yup, every single vitamin and mineral women need, and all in the finest forms for superior absorption and bioavailability, can be found in these capsules. Order one today for your favorite woman out there, or again for yourself, by going to elitelifenutrition.com/womensmulti. That's womensmulti. elitelifenutrition.com/womensmulti. And lastly, while you're at it, check out all of our other fantastic Elite Life Nutrition products too by going directly to elitelifenutrition.com/products. All right, guys, we're live. It's Justin Stenstrom from elitemanmagazine.com, and my guest today is Marcus Aurelius Anderson from marcusaureliusanderson.com. Marcus, thanks so much for coming on the show, brother. Really appreciate it.
Oh, man, thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here, and I'm stoked for our conversation.
Yeah, I love it. I just told you a minute ago, I have to ask you about your name. It's such a cool name. It's a badass name. Is it a real name?
It's a real name, but it's impossible to live up to. My my grandfather gave it to me. He was like, I want to name him Marcus, like Marcus Aurelius. And then it's like, okay, how do I live up to that name? But the cool thing is it makes me always accountable, and it keeps me honest to want to try to endeavor to be worthy of the name. Mm-hmm. So even though I can't, it keeps me kind of accountable. It keeps me moving forward. So yeah, I dig it. It's a blessing.
I love it. I actually don't know much about Marcus Aurelius, the original one, but I know he was a Stoic, and I believe he invented the whole Stoicism movement, right?
He didn't, but he learned from a lot of the people that before him really did. And, you know, as an emperor, you know, he was a rock star. Like, he had all the power in the world, and yet he used Stoicism to anchor him and keep him down to earth, which, you know, as we were talking about before, that's so key, because if you don't, you start drinking your own Kool-Aid, you believe your own hype, and before you know it, Rome's burning and you're Caligula, so we don't want that to happen.
So. Yeah. So he was one of the more popular Stoics, or
Absolutely.
How do you say it? Stoics?
He was one of the most popular Stoics. He, Epictetus, and Seneca are probably the most popular, because they all kind of have, like, Marcus Aurelius was like the kinder, gentler Stoic. Epictetus was the guy that was like in your face. He was like, quit being a bitch. And then you had Seneca, who was in the middle, that was reminding you that you're going to die soon. So it's like, all right, that's kind of.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. And as we know, like Stoicism over the past few years, especially with guys like Tim Ferriss talking about it and some of the other ones, is really caught on. What is the biggest takeaway? What is the biggest lesson that you've learned from trying to live up to the Marcus Aurelius name and what he stood for in terms of Stoicism and things like that?
Yeah, it's tough. I mean, like I would be introduced by my full name, Marcus Aurelius Anderson, as a kid. Like I'm 9 years old and I have no idea why this adult who I've never seen looks at me and they had this like look of recognition because they hear the name. And they would tell me, well, he's an emperor. I didn't know what that was. They would just say a king. But what it told me was he was a man of great gravity, but that means with great gravity came responsibility. So that's the way I always looked at it, was it's something I had to live up to. And that's maybe why I'm the way I am now. So
yeah, it's actually similar to another great quote, with great power comes great responsibility.
Exactly.
Spider-Man.
Yeah, exactly. And that's, I'm sure a Stoic said that at some point too.
Yeah, they stole that right from the Stoic. But yeah, that's I'm a big comic book fan too, like Spider-Man, Batman, not really Superman, but Spider-Man, Batman, some of those guys I love. But no,
yeah,
because
they were regular guys.
They were regular dudes. They were regular dudes. They didn't really have many like superpowers, but they used their brains and they outwitted people, and I always appreciated that. And they were always just, you know, tough as nails too. So,
yeah.
But yeah, so diving into, I think you have a really incredible story, Marcus. I think it's just, I mean, I was listening to it the other day when I was, you know, I heard you on another podcast and I was like, I got to get this guy on. Because me and you, I think we've been friends now, whatever, for a year or two or something on, you know, social media, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
But man, I heard your story and it reminded me again of just how profound it was and the adversity you had to overcome in life to be where you are at today. So just take a minute or two and just tell our listeners what it is that you went through in terms of, you know, your injury or your illness, I should say, and how you got to the point right now where you're a TEDx speaker, you're an author, you're basically a life coach where you're helping other guys get past this kind of stuff and get past adversity. How did you get to this point? Take a minute or two, fill in the gaps and let our listeners know.
Yeah, I joined the military at the ripe old age of 38. You know, that's a great age to jump in there. So, but I had just gone through a divorce and my great uncle had passed away. He was a big role model for me as well. Very much into Stoicism, even though we didn't call it that. And I went to go see if I could join the military. And they told me that 35 was the cutoff. And I was like, okay, I turned on my heel. I was going to leave. And they're like, no, come talk to us. And I did a PT test. I did the ASVAB, and I crushed both of them. They're like, well, we'll sign a release to get you in if you want to do it, but we have to know what your motivation is. And I told them why, and they were like, all right. So 6 months later, I'm getting off the bus, getting yelled at. At Fort Benning, so living the dream in infantry school. So learned a lot about myself. I needed the challenge because at that point I was kind of hit. I thought I'd hit already rock bottom, but there was more to come, obviously. Got through infantry school, didn't break my arm or my ankle or anything. Got stationed in upstate New York at Fort Drum with 10th Mountain Light Infantry Division. So about 20 miles south of the Canadian border. And when we were preparing to deploy, I suffered a severe spinal injury that left me paralyzed from the neck down. The C5 disc ruptured in my neck and it compressed my spinal cord. That's the same vertebral level where Christopher Reeve was paralyzed.
Oh.
So they sent me in the hospital. They did an MRI. They operated on me. I died twice on the operating table.
Oh, shit.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. I came to in the ICU and then they said, listen, you died twice, so I'm trying to process that. And they were like, well, the good thing is you're alive. The bad thing is you're going to be like this probably for the rest of your life if you don't walk within the next couple of days. You've got a lot of neurological damage. This is probably what you're going to be stuck with. But I was real optimistic at first because I thought, oh, well, you know, if I've overcome death, what's walking, right? It shouldn't be that big of a deal. But one day turned into a week, turned into a month, and nothing changed. And so that's when I really had to. Man, it's so easy to be philosophical about somebody else's quotes or somebody else's pain if you're not the one suffering it. But when it happens to us, we want to be the exception to the rule. We don't want to be the ones that have to like deal with it. So I laid in a bed for almost 4 months. You know, I woke up trying to figure out what the hell I'm going to do with my life. And I had a lot of regrets. I had a lot of time to think about my life. And I realized that it felt like the universe was slapping me in the face. And it had given me 40 years of all this time to use all this potential and talent, and I wasn't actualizing it. So it felt like the universe was like, okay, we're going to take it back from you. because you've been messing around this whole time. So I felt like I had wasted a lot of it. But what helped me was I started looking at what could have happened. I started looking at what could have happened if I was deployed. And for every guy that gets injured in service, it takes two people to pull him out. So I would have gotten those two people possibly hurt if it had happened overseas. I would have got the rest of my team potentially in danger. I would have got the helicopter that had to get sent in danger, the medevac team. So when I was able to look at that stuff, it gave me something to be really grateful for, because everybody talks about gratitude. You know, it's a big buzzword, but they don't really understand what it means. And you can't just be grateful for the shit that you like. You got to be grateful for all of it. And people like to be grateful whenever they make money or whenever they get a date. But when somebody cuts them off in traffic, they're pissed off at that person. They don't look at it and say, well, this is an opportunity for me to learn. So from my adversity, I learned a lot of, a lot of humility, and then a lot of opportunity is where that comes from. So that's the starting point, my friend.
Love it. I got a few questions to, regarding that story. The first one is the C5 injury. Was that the same exact one that Christopher Reeve had, or just the same type of spot?
It's the same place, but it's the same thing that when the disc ruptured, there's like disc ruptures and there's like disc like where it explodes.
Okay.
And when it explodes, when it compresses your spinal cord that much, there's no cerebral spinal fluid that can go and operate in between those areas. And your spinal cord is real small in circumference and it's delicate. It's like pieces of silk. So it takes 10 millimeters of mercury of pressure, which is about the weight of a dime, to compress it. But when you have like the consistency of a hockey puck being pushed down onto that as hard as it can, that's why I wasn't able to do anything. And it was to the point where I couldn't even breathe. I was like having a hard time getting my diaphragm to even function. That's why they're like, we got to get this guy, because we're going to lose him if we don't get in there.
Wow.
And it's pretty crazy, man. You get pushed in the operating or into the hospital, and all this stuff's going on around you, and you got like a team of people that are poking and prodding you and sticking lights in your eyes, and you're like, because at that point I was thinking, well, maybe this isn't as bad as they think it is, because I was hoping that they could just give me a shot and I could go home, but it was a little bit worse than that, so I had to face that.
So was the injury from, you said hockey puck, was it some kind of hockey injury?
No, this was just, it was just attrition from all the training leading up to it. What had happened was all that compression on my spine from basic training, from jumping out of vehicles and stuff, and the week leading up to it, I'd had like a lot of like some symptomatology in my hands and my feet. My feet were very cold. My hands were very cold. I had a lot of numbness, but it's negative 20 degrees outside and you're out there training in it all the time. So I was just like, oh, well, this is what happens. And it sounds dumb now, but when you're in the military and you're mission focused, you don't listen to your body a lot of times. You just keep telling it to shut up and you just keep pushing forward.
Yeah.
And the mind's really powerful and it can push the body to do a lot. And that's a great example of it. But at the same time, you know, you can only go so far before your body eventually starts breaking down on you. And that's what happened to me.
That's a good point. I actually have a lot of military guests on the show, Navy SEALs, Green Berets, yeah, Special Forces guys. What do you recommend? Is there something that you've come up with in your head to know when to keep pushing forward? Like, these guys are some of the fucking toughest, most mentally toughest guys you'll ever come across. But is there a time, like, have you found something when you know, like, to gear back and dial things back? And it's not just, you know, mentally being tough and trudging through. It's like, I got to actually fucking see if there's a problem here.
And that's where it's tough. And the thing with me was I kept believing that there was no reason that I shouldn't be able to do it, right? But what you have to do is you have to build in, like, little spaces, like, even with training, right? If you train as hard as you possibly can 7 days a week, you're going to overtrain or you may get injured. So you have to understand, take some time off or decompress or meditate or get away from everything or put your phone down. So you have to build those spaces in so that you can have that ability to adapt and not get yourself injured or burned out. Because if you don't, like you said, if you're constantly pushing your body, you will hit a point where you will break down. The hard part, though, is like you said, is because I'm always pushing myself and my clients the same way, where it's like, no matter where you're at, there's always at least two clicks above that you can go. And with me, though, like with my injury, I knew that there was something wrong, but I was afraid to even kind of face it. So I just kept pushing forward. I was like, well, if it's bad, it'll eventually stop me. And in my case, it did. So listen to your body, but respect your body, but try to keep it from stopping you from moving forward, in other words. So the body's almost like a child. Like, you have to constantly push it because it'll do the minimal amount if you let it. So be mentally tough, but also respect your body as much as you can.
Yeah, I wish there was a better way to judge when to dial things back and when to push forward, you know, if it's just like a mental block or something going on. But unfortunately, I think the best way, like you have found, is really just experience. Once you've experienced something like that, you'll never do that again. You'll never ignore what your body's telling you again. But until you get to that point, it doesn't have to be obviously as serious as something that you've come across, but just some type of accident or some type of illness that kind of changes your perspective on things. But I think you should, like listening to our show right now, like listening to this interview, keep that in mind. Next time you're trying to push forward and, you know, you have some things, maybe it's time to take a step back and at least examine what's happening and not just keep pushing forward like, what, you know, that tough mentality, you know, balls to the wall kind of thing. There is certainly a place to dial things back. And typically if you're having symptoms, especially multi-symptoms in different parts of your body, you should definitely, you know, stop and take a look at what's happening.
I agree. Absolutely.
Marcus, where were you? You said you were 38, I believe, when you went into the military. How was your life before that? You said you were, you know, completely lost. You thought you hit rock bottom. What were things like in Marcus's life before you entered the military and then embarked on your next stage of life?
Yeah, that was the thing. I did what a lot of people do. They get out of high school, they go to college, and they're not really sure what they want to do, or they do what somebody else thinks that they should do, or what they're, you know, they is easy for them. So I kicked around college, and I was like, oh, I don't know what I want to do. Eventually decided that I wanted to go into criminal justice, and I was almost done with that degree. And then I met a chiropractor. I was preparing to get ready for a fight, and I'd injured my shoulder. And he saw me, and he was like, hey, how long has your shoulder been hurting you like that? He saw me at the gym, and he comes up and gives me his card. And I was like, oh, chiropractors, you know, it's all smoke and mirrors. They're all quacks. And he's like, listen, if I don't help you, then you don't have to pay me. I was like, I'll see you Monday morning. So I get there, and man, he adjusts my spine and my shoulder, and he knew exactly what was wrong with it. And I was like, okay, how did you know that? How did you figure that stuff out? He's like, let's go to lunch. You know, I was his last client for that morning. And the philosophy of the holistic idea of the body from chiropractic was very much in tune. I've done martial arts since I was 11. So like all of those philosophies dovetailed perfectly about, you know, what the power that makes the body heals the body. And if we listen to our body, it'll tell us what's going on, which harkens to back to what you and I just said a couple of minutes ago. But I said, yeah. He's like, you should be a chiropractor. You would be really good for this. I'm like, okay, so what? I just take like a weekend seminar? He's like, no, it's a doctorate. And I was all, okay, so I have to turn 180 from what I was doing and start taking all these sciences and stuff. And I moved to Atlanta, Georgia. I went to Life University there, probably the best chiropractic school in the world. And it helped me a lot, and it helped me kind of get focused. But I was married at the time. I was taking a doctorate level courses, about 25 hours of that. So that was tough. I'm bartending on top of that. And so I'm just killing myself trying to get this done. But the way I look at it is that I had a year and a half left. If I could just push through, then that's whenever, you know, my wife and I could start having kids. I can start a practice, start serving, and make the most of my life. But what happened is, we were talking about priorities earlier. I prioritized the wrong stuff, and I didn't prioritize my marriage. And because I didn't do that, it fell apart. So that happened. And then like a couple of weeks after that, my great uncle, who was a really big role model for me, he was in Special Forces. He was a Green Beret in Vietnam. He passed as well. So it was like this 1-2 punch. He just knocked me on my ass. I'm just like, man. So I couldn't push myself physically anymore at the job. I didn't feel like being in chiropractic school because I couldn't focus. I wasn't grounded. I didn't have any, like, something to push me. And I started crying when my great uncles, when they were playing taps, because they're doing the 21-gun salute, that all this regalia. And they fold up the flag and they give it to my great aunt. And I'm just like losing it. And I realized that I wanted to try to join the military to see what I could do. So I talked to the recruiter, went in there. They said, well, you have to be 35. And at that point I was like, well, too late, but we've already talked about that. So they let me go, though, and that's when I really started trying to reinvent myself in the military, because, you know, everything is based on what you do. And I'm in there against guys that are half my age. All my drill sergeants are older than me, but it really keeps me pushing forward, and that's what helped me really get to that next level and start living the next part of my life.
Mm-hmm. So Did you ever actually complete the military training after that? Like when you got your life back on track and, you know, you got your spine fixed and, you know, could walk again and do all that? Or was it just like they medically discharged you?
Yeah, and they'll medically discharge you if you're not seriously injured, but I was seriously injured, so they medically retired me entirely. I was able to finish up my entire contract anyway, but, you know, even if I wasn't, there's no way they could have let me serve all the way out. And there's a part of me that was, at first I was aggravated that I didn't get to deploy, but again, like I said, if I had, it probably would have got other people hurt. So, you know, stuff happens sometimes the way it's supposed to, and sometimes for a good reason, so nobody else gets injured, so I'll take it.
Yeah, no, I believe, I say this all the time on the show too, I think everything happens for a reason, and you make the most of whatever life throws your way. Obviously, in your case, you're sitting there basically paralyzed, and it's like, all right, I'm fucked now, like, why did this happen to me? I'm sure you're fighting with God and cursing him out and mm-hmm. saying all this, you know, shit yep. of why me, like everybody else naturally does. But then it's like, all right, this is a blessing in disguise. It opens up so many other doors. You overcome that, and then the next thing you know, your life is better than it ever was before. Take us through the moment of you actually sitting there lying on the hospital bed, and they tell you that you're never going to walk again. You're going to be paralyzed. I know you're having all kinds of crazy thoughts, but what is your mindset in terms of you? Because you said earlier, like, you were optimistic that you could figure it out. What was in it that inside you that made you say that you're going to beat this thing and that you're going to walk again? What were some of the things that you were saying to yourself and some of the emotions that you were having?
Yeah, I was just insanely optimistic because I knew, first of all, that's what I would have to be able to overcome. But again, like I said, if they tell you that you died and you came back, I was like, oh, well, compared to that, it's not a big deal. But that was the hard part, because once the week came and went, now I'm in it. Now I have to look at it. I turned 40 years old in a bed, you know, wondering if I'd ever was going to be able to walk again. And that's what kind of hit me too, because it made me really sit back and say, God, you know, how am I going to do this? And I wake up in the mornings and tell myself that I'm, you know, I'm powerful beyond measure and I can do anything. But after about 3 months of that, that's when I was just angry. And anger directed outward is anger, but anger directed inward is depression. And, you know, I was literally suicidal, but I couldn't even act on that because of my position. So, like you said, the universe cut off all other options other than me to just sit there and look at my life and just think about it and think about, what should I be doing next? What is the opportunity in this? What should I be learning from this? And I couldn't find any opportunities. I couldn't find any lesson. But like we said before, once I started looking at it as, okay, that was something I could be grateful for, grateful that nobody else got hurt. Once I had that gratitude, that cornerstone, then I could start looking at all the other stuff. Then eventually I was to the point where I was the bed I may never get out of, or the room I may never leave, because compared to where I was, I'd absolutely take that. And I look at other people too. I talk about it in my TED talk about, you know, there's stuff that we don't like every day that we take for granted that other people would literally kill for. The fact that 3/4 of the population in the world don't have water or electricity or food, that really keeps us honest. And I'm not saying it like first world shaming, but you have people bitching that the fact that they don't have good Wi-Fi right now. And right now there's somebody that's fighting for their life. So it's like, it's about perspective. And I got a hell of a lot of perspective getting slapped in the face with adversity.
Is it possible to have a perfect suitcase? With my Away luggage, I think I found just that. Away uses high quality materials while offering a much lower price compared to other brands by cutting out the middleman and selling directly to you. All of their suitcases are made with a premium German polycarbonate, making it both incredibly durable but also very lightweight. The interior features a patent pending compression system, helpful for overpackers like me. They also have 4 360 degree spinner wheels, which guarantee a smooth and versatile ride, and a TSA approved combination lock built into the top of the bag to prevent theft. And lastly, and probably my most favorite feature of all, is their charger that comes equipped with the suitcase that'll charge your cell phone, tablet, and other USB device like my iPhone up to 5 times from one single charge. For people like me who always have their phone dying on them at the most inopportune times, this is fantastic. The Away suitcase is sleek, clean, lightweight, strong, and an overall must-have when I'm on the go. With free shipping to all 48 contiguous states, a lifetime warranty if anything ever breaks, and a 100-day trial period to test it out for yourself, you have to take them up and get yourself an Away suitcase today. Go to awaytravel.com/eliteman right now and use the coupon code ELITEMAN at checkout to get a special $20 off your first order. I'm telling you, you're going to love this Away suitcase. That's awaytravel.com/eliteman and the coupon code ELITEMAN to get $20 off. So Marcus, here's the question. If you, because right now I can see you, you look good, you look healthy. I see your posts on social media, you look great, you're in martial arts, kicking ass. If you never were able to recover from that injury and walk again and move again and perform and do martial arts again, would you be content with your life today? Would you be grateful? Would you still be happy with being paralyzed for the rest of your life? Like say living like Stephen Hawking, and not being able to do physical things. Like, that's a huge part of being a human and enjoying life. What's your perspective on that?
That's a great question, because it really makes you look at it. And I think at the end of the day, I would still be grateful. I would still be happy. And the reason is because even if I couldn't move, I think I would still find a way to be able to, you know, get on stage and speak. I think I would still be able to find a way to dictate into a computer and write a book. And, you know, there's a martial arts saying that says that there are many paths to the top of the mountain. And no matter what the path is, as long as I can get there and I can make an impact on somebody else and make them change their lives and make it resonate so strongly that they act and they tell other people and then they act. And all of a sudden you have this huge, you know, tsunami of change. That's what I want. And I think that whether I'm physically active, you know, or whether I'm stuck in a bed or a wheelchair, I hope the message would be the same. Because again, once I was able to find that gratitude, that's when everything changed. And even if my body didn't recover or adapt, the lesson would still be there.
Yeah. And I'm just, you know, reading you right now, looking at you now, hearing you from before when I listened to you, you're a very down-to-earth guy. And you strike me as someone that would be okay with, not like you would be happy with that it happened or that you weren't able to overcome paralysis, but you strike me as someone who's very down to earth and who has learned that lesson about life. I think we all get a handful maybe of lessons, profound lessons in life that we're supposed to learn and grow from. And that, of course, is probably the biggest one you'll ever face, or if not one of them. And I think God or whatever you believe in, whether it's God or you know, a higher power, whatever it is, just the universe, I think that lesson was given to you and you knocked it out of the park. You know, they basically tested you, or God, whatever, tested you for X amount of months, and you passed that test. You showed that you learned what it means to be grateful, what life is really about, and, you know, the important things in life. And whether you're walking like you are today and doing physical things, or whether you would be in a wheelchair, you know, someone else comes to mind too that we had on the show, Dr. Sean Stevenson.
He's amazing.
Yeah, incredible guy. Same thing with him. Like, he can't do a lot of the physical stuff that you and I can do. Or there's another guy too, a speaker. I forget his name, but he doesn't have any arms and any legs. He's huge, megastar, like Sean Stevenson. But these guys have learned and are more enlightened than so many other, than, you know, 99.9% of the population because of the things that they've gone through in their life. And I think you don't necessarily have to stay paralyzed to be an enlightened person. But the fact that you learned that lesson and that you were lucky enough to walk again, I think is really cool. And it's awesome that you were blessed to get that lesson and learn from that.
Thank you. And you're absolutely right. I mean, I was paralyzed physically, but so many people now are paralyzed, you know, emotionally or, you know, because they won't act. And, you know, no matter what happens in our life, we can either bitch and complain about it and play a victim, or we can do something about it. And that's what it comes down to, no matter what it is. So if it's your relationship, if it's your job, it's your body, it's your mindset, are you going to do something about it? Because if not, you're just going to sit there and you're going to be like everybody else who bitches and complains and moans. And here's the problem. The victim mindset is very seductive. It's very easy to start getting into that cycle. And you love telling people about how much your life sucks and how bad you have it. And they almost turn it into a competition. That's what happens. People will, if they start identifying as a victim, they'll always be a victim, and they'll find a way to get victimized by anything. So they'll become easily, you know, offended by stuff, or they let themselves down. They let themselves off the hook. And if we do that, the problem is that becomes a habit. And then before you know it, that bleeds into everything else you do in your life. So now you cheat on your diet and you cheat on your girlfriend and you cheat on your job and your dreams because you're not doing what you want to do or what you should be doing. And, you know, the easy path is not the one that, it doesn't lead anywhere. So the reason why people want all these things that are so difficult to acquire is because they are difficult to acquire. So if it wasn't difficult, you wouldn't appreciate it in the first place. And that's kind of what adversity does. It kicks you in the ass and it makes you, it questions you and it says, do you really want this? Are you willing to go through me to get it? Because adversity doesn't guard the stuff that isn't worth having. So suck it up, push on, and ask yourself if it's really worth this endeavor. And if it is, then go through it and stop complaining about it and push forward. You can get there if you want to, but just hoping that somebody's going to pick it up and hand it to you, you wouldn't respect it even if they did. So do the work and get there yourself.
Yeah, I love it. And for me too, adversity, it has been huge across all areas of my life. It really has. It's changed my life. It's shaped my life. It's made me a better man. I'm thinking back to when I was 17 years old and I was suicidally depressed and was getting panic attacks 3 to 4 times a week and had anxiety 99% of the time. I'd get like a 1% reprieve in my anxiety battle for like, you know, a couple minutes and then it'd come back on. It was just nonstop shit, like mental anguish for me for about a year or so. And at the time, it was the absolute worst thing I could have possibly thought of. And, you know, I was doing the same thing. Why me? Why is this happening to me? What did I do? But looking back at it, it was a blessing in disguise. And that adversity is what I needed to basically kick my ass in gear and make me change a lot of things in my life and set my life straight. And honestly, if it wasn't for the pain I had back then, the anxiety, the depression, I wouldn't be here doing this podcast right now. I wouldn't be here talking to you, Marcus. I wouldn't be interviewing experts every week and reaching so many people and helping them out, because I would have just been a regular dude who, you know, like you for the first 38 years or so, kind of just, you know, not doing what they really wanted to or not having that purpose in their life. But that actually gave me purpose and opened my eyes to what the world is really like.
That's exactly what it is. And the reality is this, we are only as strong as the adversity that we overcome. So if you allow that to be your limit, that's as far as you're ever going to get. So like you said, if you didn't go through those things that you went through, there's no way that you would have been able to get stronger. It's the thing that strengthens us. There's a, I called it an adversity scale. It's like from 0 to 10. So like 0 is heaven on earth and 10 is the worst shit you've ever been through in your life. So for me, that's dying on the table twice and being paralyzed. So if I'm having a bad day or if I feel myself get into that cycle, I look back from it, my problem at a third person perspective and say, all right, on a scale of 0 to 10, a real scale of 0 to 10, and I'm brutally honest with myself, and if I say, where is this, really? And it's usually like a 3 or 4 at worst. So when I do that, it really just kicks me in the ass, and I'm like, you know what? Yeah, it's not that bad. I've been through a lot worse than this. So one, that stops that cycle of victim mentality. Two, it helps me see that there's a lot more that I can accomplish. So even if it's a day where I don't get a lot accomplished, I know that there's a lot more potential that I can actualize. And that helps me move forward as opposed to sitting there. Because we can get the other direction where we start kicking ourselves in the ass and we do negative self-talk. And we're like, man, I can't believe I'm losing my discipline and this workout sucked and my diet's not good and I'm not making the sales I need or my business isn't where it is. If you do that, that cascades quickly into negativity. So you have to walk that fine line between kicking yourself in the ass and intellectually sprinting towards your goals, but also respecting yourself enough and giving yourself that self-care. Kind of like what we were talking about before where you need to push yourself, but you also need to be smart enough and wise enough to trust your body and give yourself that time to recover as much as you can as well.
Yeah, I love that. And the other thing about adversity too that I've noticed, and actually I believe it was Justin Ehrlich, a past guest on the show, who brought this up when we were talking about something similar. Not only does it make you mentally tough, mentally stronger, emotionally stronger, of course, like you can face more adversity, you can face more setbacks, more challenges, rejection, things like that, because you, it's like a muscle, you work it out, and of course you get stronger as you do it. As you said, you know, it's the scale. And if you face something that's, I forget, 0 or 10, if you say something, say it's a 10 and it's the worst thing possible, I think you said it was actually 0. So 0 is the worst thing possible, and you know, you're facing a 7 or 8 or whatever it is, then it's really not a big impact on you, you know, against the adversity scale of what you've already faced. you're able to overcome more things with life, with time. You're able to face things and deal with them a lot easier because you've already done those things. But on the other hand, it also, adversity also gives you compassion. It makes you feel empathy for people and makes you realize what other people are going through. And as a human being, as someone walking through this earth for 70, 80, 90 years, you learn these things with time. But as you face adversity, it's like a crash course and getting a whole shitload of compassion, a whole shitload of empathy and feeling for other people, understanding where other people are coming from, having more love for other people. Even if you don't agree with them, you can still love other people and still have that compassion and care for them. And that's what adversity does. It humbles you and makes you open up your eyes to some of the other struggles that other people face and to really respect them and care for them. And I think that's, you know, not to sound, you know, lame or anything like that. I just think it's really cool and a profound thing that's happening when you do face adversity.
That's an excellent point, and I absolutely agree that.
Did I mess up the scale, by the way?
Well, zero is like heaven on earth, and then okay, 10 is like okay. The worst thing you've done. But no, but you had the right, you were right there, and the idea too, like you said, is, I mean, that empathy that builds and that grows, and just like you said before, so now if that guy cuts me off in traffic, instead of wanting to just like follow him and beat his ass, you know, when he gets out of the car,
yeah,
it's like, you know, in the grand scheme of things, that guy may have had a shit day. Maybe something bad happened, or maybe that's just the way he is. Chances are me yelling at him is not going to change it. Chances are me beating him up is not going to change it. It's just going to make it worse. So the grand scheme of things, I just let him go and I hope that things are better for him. And again, understand, having that empathy, it's like, man, we all have bad days. I mean, I hope if I acted like that, somebody would be wise enough and take the high road and not want to, you know, try to cut me off or something either. So there's a lot of truth in that. And that's some really great wisdom you provided out there.
Yeah. And the other thing too with that is not letting other people affect you. Like if that guy is cutting you off and, you know, he gets in front of you and you get all pissed off, there's something to that. Like it's kind of like the whole Stoic philosophy too, right? Like where you don't get pissed off, you don't let other people's emotions dictate your emotions and then dictate the rest of your day and, you know, your interactions with other people from that point forward. It's just letting things like slide off of you and having that like compassion, like you said, of understanding that maybe this guy's day is going real shitty and, you know, maybe he just got fired or maybe honestly his life has been pretty shitty up until that point and he just things don't go his way or things haven't gone his way and he's an unhappy person or maybe he has a condition, you know, like a medical condition and that just makes him unhappy or that he has a constant, you know, has to constantly deal with. There's a number of things out there, but having that compassion, that understanding that maybe there's something else to it can also allow you to free up your time and not let that affect the rest of your day and your emotions and, you know, just generally bring you down. Because if you're going to get stuck in that trap, if you're going to let other people affect you like that, it's going to happen all the time. And it's a tough rat race to get out of and to start thinking of not going down that path.
That's exactly it. And that breeds that reactionary mindset, right? Like you're always putting out fires or you're always waiting for something to happen to react to. But like you said, that means you're not living in control. That means your beliefs and your life is literally predicated on what somebody else does. And that's not what we should be doing with our lives. And that's sort of what I was doing before I got injured. But once I got hurt like that, it really brought that lesson home to understand that the only thing that we can control is what we are doing, our emotions. I call it a triangle of power. It's just the triangle of what I can control. And the top of the triangle is what I eat. The one of the other sides of the triangle is my physical activity. And then the third one is my mindset. Everything outside of that, I cannot control. When I went hunting with my great uncle, the one I talked about who passed away when I was about 9, we went deer hunting. And it's cold outside and it's snowing and it's miserable and we're walking to the blind. We're sitting there and he says, he looks at me and I'm just shivering. He looks down at me and he says, "Are you cold?" And I told him that I was. He said, and I looked at him, I said, "Aren't you cold?" And he said, "Well, I am, but I'm going to give you a secret. And if you can do this now, you'll have an advantage for the rest of your life." He says, what you're focused on right now is the cold, the hardship. What you should be focused on is the hunt, the purpose. If you constantly worry about the hardship, it will eventually beat you. But if you think about the hunt, if you think about the purpose, now your shot will be true. Now you can bring food back to the house. And the idea is to understand what the idea is, what you're trying to get done in that moment. there's always going to be a reason for us to not do it. There's always going to be a hardship for us to hold us back if we allow it. But again, that's why having purpose and having that why that's so important is what helps you get through those things. And that's what adversity does. It basically tests you to make sure that what you're trying to get accomplished is something that you really want to get done. If it's not, then you probably shouldn't even be doing it in the first place.
Yeah, I love that, man. That was a very incredible lesson passed down onto you. And, you know, thanks for sharing that with the Elite Man audience, because, you know, I think a lot of guys can take away from that. When you're, Marcus, when you're lying on that bed for 3 months, I believe you said you thought it was going to be a couple days, and you know, you can get up and walk and then beat it in a couple days or something like that. You're sitting on there for 3 months, man. How does, what happens with the paralysis? Does it get worse? Does your depression sink in? And then, of course, what's the first thing that really happened where you knew, like, you know, actually, because after 3 months, I'm guessing your hope, your optimism sort of started to fade, if not completely disappear by that 3 month mark. What happened after that for you to actually get hope back again and then start seeing that you could potentially walk again?
Yeah, and this is a important point too. So they started doing physical therapy on me, but what they would do is I couldn't move, so they would bring somebody into my room. They would fasten my hands to like a machine that would kind of create motion in my upper body. They would move my arms and they would move my legs to keep the blood circulating and to try to kind of reawaken that neurological impulse. But nothing was going on. So like you said, after a few weeks of that, I pretty much had given up hope. Then a few weeks after that, I got a glimmer of hope and I started to get a little bit of movement back in my hands. And I was excited. And so I went from this place of being grateful for what happened to being selfish again. And I was like, man, I can't wait till I get out of the military and I can't wait to be out of this life that sucks and I can't wait to move forward. But what happened was when I started thinking more selfishly and self-centered again, about a week later from that, I regressed back almost to exactly where I was before. That's when I was at that lowest point. And that's when it really, again, it really focused on that lesson, which was be grateful. Be grateful for what you have and not what you don't have. And so I had to revisit that again. And it was pretty difficult because I thought that I had been given this glimmer of hope and then it had been ripped away from me again. So I just, with faith, said, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and try this again. And I became grateful again. And as the time passed, eventually I was starting to get movement back in my fingers, back in my feet. And from that day forward, I've never thought that way, the way that I did before that, because I never wanted to have that opportunity to fall back into that trap again, that self-centered mentality where it's all about me, 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 and I. And who knows? I mean, maybe that would have happened anyway. Maybe that was just the way the body worked. But all I know for sure is the only thing that I changed was the way that I thought about my life and the intent that I put out there. And once I was able to do that, now I've redoubled my efforts and I live my life with that mentality every day. So that's why when I talk about it in the TEDx talk or in my book, where I'm like, if you woke up tomorrow paralyzed from the neck down, what would you wish you would have accomplished with your life? Because if you really take that question seriously and you really, really ponder on it, that alone can reframe everything that you do and it will change every decision that you make from there on out. And then if you think about that and then if you think to yourself, okay, now let's imagine that you were paralyzed and you had the chance to do your life, you know, almost over again, what would you do differently? And by thinking like that, that gives you a hell of a lot of perspective and it makes you really, really crazy accountable to yourself about what it is you want to get done. And it keeps you really, really focused.
Yeah, that is incredible. What is the exact timeline for when you started moving your fingers around and then when you started maybe moving your limbs around and when you started walking again? And then, of course, when you're like 100%, you know, Marcus again, you can move around, you can jump, you can fight, you can do whatever you want.
It was a year before they got me to where I could actually physically move and like take care of myself. But even thereafter, like I still had like the dexterous capacity in my hands and my feet were sort of compromised. And that's where the martial arts helped me take me to the, you know, to that final stage where I'm not where I was before I was injured. I don't know if I physically can be because I still have some, you know, numbness on my hands and my feet to an extent, but being able to work a blade correctly or being able to swing a stick or punch or grapple or any of that stuff, that is a huge, huge form of physical therapy in my mind. And it really helped me get those fine motor skills back and get that dexterous capacity back and that palpatory capacity to where now I can live a life. And if you saw me and you didn't know that there was something wrong before that, hopefully my goal is to make it look like nothing's ever happened. And that's what I try to do. So every time I do a technique, I try to make it very smooth. I try to make it very seamless. I try to bring the power. I try to have that sensitivity as much as I can. And that's why the martial arts are great for me. They literally changed my life. And of course, the philosophy is what shaped my mindset as well. So I'm very grateful for those opportunities.
Yeah. And to your point where you said, basically, you started getting better when your thought process changed and you started being more positive and optimistic, or grateful, I should say. And then you started kind of getting a little cocky, and then you regressed. Yep. And went backwards for a few weeks. And then when you reignited it and started being grateful again and changing your energy into a positive one, you started healing up. And from that point forward, you never changed. Look, I don't know exactly what's happening there. I don't know if science can ever prove that, but I know that there is something there, and there's something to that. And I had a guy recently by the name of Art Geiser on the show who talks all about energy and healing with energy. He's an energetic NLP expert, which is pretty cool. I've never heard of it up until I met him, but really great guy. And he also shared with me, too, a number of studies, PubMed, scientific research papers that have not been able to explain exactly what's happening, but they're explaining that there's something going on with like energy, positive energy and healing. And they demonstrate over and over again that there is something that we can't quite explain how it's happening, but that it is happening. And I absolutely think there, I don't know what's happening exactly. I don't think, like I said, I don't think anybody can really explain it, but I know that there is something there. There's something going on there in the body, in the mind, in the spirit, whatever you want to call it, that when you have that positive energy that you're going to succeed, or that things are getting better, that it slowly does happen. And, whether I don't think alone that can change your paralysis and, make a paralyzed person walk again. But I think it has something to do definitely with the healing process and speeds things up or actually, helps the healing process go along where it makes it easier and faster.
It absolutely does. And for the people that think that that's too woo-woo, because I don't know where people stand on that, but here's the reality. If you were that desperate and you were that scared, you will put hope against hope just to have the possibility to walk again. And we don't really know what the things that you and I think that we believe until we've actually faced some sort of adversity. We have no clue if we actually believe that or not. Most people have their opinions veiled in this like vacuum of ease where they're never questioned. Like they can think whatever they want and nobody's going to push back against them. But you don't know what you truly believe until the only thing that you have left are those beliefs. So no matter what the scientific, and I've had people tell me too that there are scientific studies that it can explain it, that's cool and that's awesome. And I agree there absolutely is something there. But even if we don't prove it yet, I'm sure that in years from now they're going to have, it'll be like anything else, just like what they were talking about where they would play music on water and all of a sudden the cellular structure of the water would change. That's stuff that we take for granted now. We're like, yeah, if you play heavy metal music on water, it's going to change the cellular dynamic of everything. I'm sure that 50 years, 100 years from now, people are going to be like, oh yeah, how can you not assume that? And even the idea of energy in and of itself, it doesn't have to be woo-woo. You and I can have a conversation in a room and then there's somebody that you don't like that walks in the room, the whole energy changes in the room. It doesn't necessarily mean that the energy per se changes, but the entire dynamics of that room changes. If you have a room full of people and somebody that everybody likes walks in, all of a sudden everybody's like, yay, look who's here, and everybody's excited. But if it's a person they don't like, the whole mood shifts and now the morale goes down. So no matter the semantics of what you call it, it's absolutely there. It absolutely affects people. And if you can learn to harness that and channel it, it will give you a huge advantage, especially when you're facing something that's really difficult at the time.
Yeah, and like you said, I don't really think it's as woo-woo as it may seem on the surface either. Just diving into physiologically speaking, we know that the body, the subconscious mind controls so many things. Hypnosis, that's proven. Like people know hypnosis works. NLP, that's proven. It works. Stuff like that works. Music, even something like music changes the neuroplasticity of the brain. Listening, like how crazy is that? Listening to music, or even babies, infants listening to music can help their brains develop better. That shit is proven, and this is not too far off from that. It's something that, like, having those positive thoughts, that positive energy and thinking positively, you're changing the hormones being released. You're changing the neurotransmitters. You're changing all the chemicals throughout your body from negative ones, like, say, cortisol or stress hormones, two positive ones and things that you need to heal. And your body is absolutely in tune with your thoughts and your mind. And just speaking even personally from becoming more of a positive person after the experience I had when I was 17, 18 years old, my life changed. And that was a big part of it was, you know, hypnosis and NLP and some of the other strategies, but just being more positive and more accepting and compassionate, like we talked about earlier, of the world changed my life. It changed me physically, it changed me mentally, it changed me emotionally. That really is, if you boil it down, that's all energy. That's positive energy. That's having the right type of philosophy, outlook on life. And like I said, I'm not really into all that woo-woo shit. I don't believe a lot of it. But again, there is something to this. And I absolutely agree with what you said when you started being more positive, when you started thinking in terms of gratitude, that helped speed up your recovery and helped you walk again.
I agree. And Bruce Lee always said that to absorb what is useful, discard what is useless, and that what is specifically your own. And so if what we're talking about is something that you can grasp and you can actually use in your life, and again, I agree with you that the positive thoughts and the positive mentality alone can make a huge impact, try it. And if you do it for 2 weeks and your life gets better, guess what? Fantastic. And if you try it for 2 weeks and it doesn't change anything, guess what? You haven't lost anything. You're in the exact same spot that you were before you tried it. So give it a shot, and if nothing else, you know, you're not going to lose anything in the process.
For the guys listening who face challenges, who face adversity, maybe they don't have the life-threatening illness, disease that you faced, that you had to overcome, the accident. What do you recommend for them, just day-to-day, or even, you know, every once in a while someone has that adversity, that challenge that knocks them on their ass? What do you recommend for them? What's the best tip you have for them to get back up, to keep moving forward? Based off what you've overcome in your life and the way you were able to turn that into a gift, to turn the adversity into probably your greatest gift, what are some of the takeaways that you can give to guys, the single greatest takeaway that other guys listening can take away in their own life?
The single greatest takeaway when you're facing adversity is pointing you in the direction of opportunity. So it's showing you a chink in your armor. It's shining light on a weakness that you have. So when you find that, when you're facing some sort of adversity, ask yourself, where is the opportunity in this? Where is the beauty in this? Where is the lesson in this? What am I supposed to be learning? So, like I mentioned before, if you're throwing a punch and you drop your hand and you get punched in the face, the lesson is to keep your hands up when you throw a punch. If that guy cuts you off in traffic and you get pissed off and your blood pressure raises, the lesson is don't let your blood pressure be raised because of some idiot in front of you that you don't even know, who honestly probably doesn't even care that he did that to you. He's forgotten about you already. He's not worthy of your emotions. He's not worthy of your time. He's not worthy of that energy. Find the opportunity and the adversity, and it will lift you up. If you see it as something that is oppressive that you cannot get over, it will keep you in that stagnated place for as long as you let it. So look for the opportunity and look for the gratitude in all of the adversity that you face from day to day.
As far as, though, say, you know, everybody's human. You're human. I'm human. We have our mistakes. We know what to do a lot of the time. Sometimes we forget, or sometimes we just don't feel like doing the work. In a situation like that, someone cuts you off. Someone, you know, slights you in some capacity. Someone pisses you off in another capacity. What's the tool right away for them to use? What's a little skill, a little trick or technique that they can use to snap themselves out of that negative thought pattern that's going to most likely persist after that moment and get them back into being grateful, being happy, being content with their own life, and not letting that affect them?
Yeah, that's a great question. Ask yourself, in the grand scheme of things, how important is this? Like, am I going to let the rest of my life or the rest of my day or the rest of my 5 minutes after this going to be affected by that? That shouldn't be something powerful enough that makes the rest of my day. Like, if I had a perfect day up to then all of a sudden I'm going to say, oh, my day was crap because of that. That's not what it is. The idea is, if Marcus Aurelius says, if it is endurable, then endure it. And that's it. So in the grand scheme of things, that guy cutting me off in traffic, it's not going to ruin my day. It's not worth me getting mad about. And if I do get mad, try to laugh it off. Give yourself a couple of minutes to be mad about it. Let it run its course. And then say, after 2 minutes, I'm not going to be mad about this anymore, and I'm going to move forward. And then eventually, if it's 2 minutes, now the next time it happens, do it for a minute and a half. And then the next time it happens, do it for a minute. And gradually just taper that down. And before you know it, you'll start seeing that it's not that big of a deal. It's not worth getting upset about. And in the grand scheme of things, that does not change your life at all. Now, if you were to follow that guy and all of a sudden you get into a wreck because of it, that will change your life. Maybe not in a positive manner, but understand what's important and what's not. And if it's not important, let it fall away. If it's not in the path of your goal, it's not worthy of your attention. So just let it go, move forward, let it run off your back, and keep going forward like a stoic.
Yeah, that little taking a break moment too for a minute or a couple minutes, that's actually a great strategy for couples who are having a fight. Like I've had many relationship experts on the show in the past, and that's one of the recurring themes is taking a 5-10 sometimes half hour break and cooling off and just not trying to still continue to have that fight, because it's only going to get worse if you have that fight when there's so much tension and stress going on in that moment. If you take a break from that and just cool off and then reconvene, 9 times out of 10, you find out that the problems, the fight you were having, the argument you were having, whatever it was, isn't really that big of a deal. And you can just talk things through rationally and get over it much, much more easier that way.
That's it. And Seneca says the best antidote for anger is delay.
I like that. Wow. That's pretty cool. What do you do during the day, Marcus, for gratitude? Are you like a journaler? Are you a meditator? Or are you someone who reads this stoicism stuff and tries to implement as much as possible from it? What are some of the strategies, things that you do throughout the day to have more gratitude and to be more level-headed?
I practice gratitude, and I do think about it. I don't think it as some people are very antiquated, where they're like, these are the 3 things this morning I'm grateful for, these are the things this afternoon that I'm grateful for, or whatever. I try to find gratitude in everything as much as I can and acknowledge it. But at the end of the night, when I brush my teeth, I think of the 3 adversities that I overcome that day. And that is on the other end of gratitude, because I'm always grateful for things. But I think about, I had a client who had clinical depression, and for him, just getting out of bed was a victory. So when he would brush his teeth at night, just getting out of bed was like an adversity he overcame. Just being able to have a conversation with somebody or smile or say hi, that was a small micro adversity that he was able to overcome. And it, just like you said, it's like a muscle. If you can gradually build these things up, before you know it, you're leaping over these huge obstacles that, 6 months ago, you never would have even fathomed potentially possible. So I do think about, the adversities that I'm able to overcome in that day. And that also is the balance to the gratitude, the things that I'm grateful for. So if I can think about the adversities I'm overcoming, that makes me grateful for those things and grateful for everything else in my life. And even in the morning, like I'll get up and I'm very physically active, because I realized that there was a part of me that took my physicality for granted. So getting up in the morning and doing some sort of workout, whether it be with the kettlebells or lifting or hitting a bag or whatever it is, it gives me that wake up. It really gets my body primed for the rest of the day. And if I can do that and I can have, if I can win the morning, then that makes it easier to win the afternoon. That makes it easier to win the week, yada, yada, yada from there on out. But it sets the pace. It dictates the pace for success for the rest of that day. And it primes your mind, like you said, for gratitude and makes you ready to get everything else done that you have to do. And now you can tackle the day without even if the rest of the day goes to hell in a handbasket, you already had a great workout. You already had the gratitude. You're already ready for it. And that's one way to make sure that you win every day.
Yeah, I love it. Your book's called The Gift of Adversity. I love the title. And it really is just so applicable across the board in terms of learning things from life and taking away from life's lessons, whether it's a shitstorm that you face when you're younger or a major accident when you're older, or just a changing, of the guard as you get older with time and lose some of the things you can't do. We learn things through adversity, and we become better human beings, better people, when we face and overcome challenges. So I love what you're up to, man. I think it's a great story. I truly resonate with what you say and what you shared with us today. Is there a last send-off takeaway message, Marcus, you'd like to leave our Elite Man audience? And then, of course, a place where our listeners can check out more about your work.
There's so many things I'd love to say, and I don't want to I want to just keep it simple. And again, the idea is, adversity is a gift. Embrace it. Understand that when it's happening to you. If you can have that mindset now before you face it, you're going to be a lot better off. But if you wait until the moment of battle to try to figure it out, it's going to slow you down quite a bit. So that would be the big takeaway for me. If you want to get a hold of me, if you want coaching, if you want to book me for a speaking engagement, if you want to send me an email, MarcusAureliusAnderson.com. You can find me on all social media, Marcus Aurelius Anderson on, you know, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, and drop me a line and say, hey, I'd love to talk to you and love to work with you.
Awesome, man. Guys, make sure you check him out. Marcus, thanks again for coming on, brother. Really do appreciate it, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, my friend. I appreciate it, and I appreciate the opportunity.
Have you joined the Elite Man newsletter yet? If not, get on it now. Go to EliteManMagazine.com/newsletter and sign up to get special Elite Man content not seen nor heard anywhere else. Get all of our bonus podcast information, sneak peeks into upcoming shows, behind-the-scenes content, special offers, and exclusive Elite Man updates you won't find anywhere else. I'm telling you, if you're not on our newsletter, you are absolutely missing out. Go to EliteManMagazine.com/newsletter and become a true member of the Elite Man community right now. I look forward to speaking to you soon. EliteManMagazine.com/newsletter.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.